development. And that's a concept that a lot of people don't want to engage for the rest of the world. It's fine for us, but it's not that great for everybody else. And then the second hour, we're going to be talking about carnivore. I'm not going to tell you anything else. Just carnivore. All things about carnivore. If you know what carnivore is, you know what I'm going to be talking about. If you don't know what carnivore is, well, you'll have to stay tuned till a little bit after 11 o'clock with our special guest. Now, later on in this hour, we're going to be bringing in Bill Whalen, who is from the Hoover Institute. Bill has been a regular on Fox TV. You may have seen him on there once in a while. Those of you that watch Enlightened News and, basic news that is honest and fair, not the slanted news like we get from CBS. And isn't that what it's all about right now? Then isn't there a lot of negativism out there, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, before I get going here, I want to give you the phone number to call if you want to join in on this conversation this morning. 479-1080, 831-479-1080. Anyway, isn't that right? Don't we have just an overall pall of negativism going on in our country right now, no matter where you see it, and it's especially prevalent in the mainstream press. You've seen it there. Iraq, there's no way we can have an election. Social Security, no, don't touch it. You're going to wreck it. You're going to screw everything up. Or how about, it's just the typical same track that the press has been taking for years. And then, on top of all this, we've got our Senator Arseface Boxer. Yes. Senator Arseface, who is out there, this has been the most embarrassing couple of weeks for California, I think, in the history of California. Did you hear, first of all, Senator Arseface went out and decided she was going to stop the vote on the Senate floor, the electoral vote to put President Bush into office. As you know, they have to vote on that every year. This is the first time anybody's done that. I don't think they've done it before. She had to do it. Oh, it was absolutely necessary. And then, of course, she followed up with her unbelievable, rude interview of Condoleezza Rice, which was totally out of realm, talking about how she was basically lying. This has been the whole ultra-liberal thought pattern. Lie, lie. Oh, but they lied. Well, get over it. It's over. They lied. So what? They didn't lie. Let's get it straight. There was information that came from a CIA that was inspired by the Clinton administration. In fact, it was a Clinton administration's guy in there. Tenet. Wasn't it? Okay, we got to remember that. These groups got together and they have created, what should I say, the combination of the mainstream press and what I would call the actual axis of liberalism, which is Kennedy, Boxer, and Kennedy, Boxer, and King. Why am I saying that? Kennedy and Boxer and Kerry. Why am I saying King? Maybe that's why I got this pressure in my mind of John Kerry. He's a king. He kind of got that nose up in the air and he looks down at you all the time. Anyway, this group has gotten together and they used, of course, CBS in one of the most embarrassing moments that CBS has ever had in this history, with Dan Rather having to basically file out of the room without any going away party. He doesn't get a watch. He's not going to get the golden ring or the special vacation. Rather's gone. And this group got together with the Democratic group trying to put out mass misinformation. It's sort of Fabianistic. Do you guys know what Fabianism is? It's that group of people out there that were formed many, many years ago, grouped of people that want to disinform in order to get their socialist agenda in front of us. And this has been the case here in this whole last year, and now it's going ahead. The press continues to try and beat up George Bush and his ideas and his policies, And no question, look at, let's just talk about some of the things that have been going on. We've got a better economy. They can't stand that. The thing going in Iraq, we're going to have a vote in Iraq on January 30th. And yes, it's going to be a tough vote. It's not going to be a vote that everybody's just going to jump in and be gratefully welcomed to the poll. We know there's going to be fighting. That isn't unusual in any burgeoning democracy. So people are down on that. Oh, it's not going to be a good vote. It's going to be a vote. But yet millions have signed up to vote. And thousands are manning the polls over there and over here. And they're fighting up. Yet the press continues to dwell on the negative. And isn't it just like it was in Vietnam? The press always talking down about Vietnam. Now, whether you were in favor of Vietnam, I don't think many of us really now in retrospect realize it was that great of an idea to do that. The idea that, for instance, with the Tet offensive, I don't know how many of you remember that. It was the big offensive that we went in and just pounded the North Vietnamese almost into submission. In fact, the North Vietnamese were ready to go to the bargaining table at that time. But it stopped. Why? Because the press over here continually said, this is the wrong war, this is bad, we lost the Tet, blah, blah, blah. And what ended up happening? They got the strength to continue. And it's the same thing they're trying to do with this in Iraq right now. They're trying to give us this negative attitude, this totally, it's never going to work, it's going to be a quagmire, a quagmire. And it's got me, it's driving me crazy. Let's see, we've got Bill on the line. Maybe Bill wants to come in here and tell us a little bit of his thoughts on this. Bill, you're from Monterey, right?
Yeah, Roger. How are you?
Okay, let me have it. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, I think Boxer and Kennedy and Kerry, and I think of late even Carter, I think they're on the payroll of the Arab lobby.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they just, Carter... there was a guy who was, I don't know, I think he was a naturalized citizen, but he was dealing in Iraqi oil, this UN oil for food scam.
Mm.
And they nailed him on being an agent for Iraq without filling out the proper papers. And I guess he's got ties to Jimmy Carter, and Jimmy Carter is coming into the scope of this investigation. So I got a feeling that the news services... I think they're getting money from the Arab lobby, and that's why we got this slant on our news 24 hours a day.
Kind of like they say Bush has they're sending, they've got a big profit for all of Bush's oil buddies. Obviously, Carter must have something going with him in the peanut area.
Yeah, I think this UN oil for food scam goes real deep, and from what I understand, from what I'm reading, they don't want to let out the paperwork on it. They're holding back on the investigation, impeding it as much as they can.
Now, let me ask you something, Bill. One of the things that came out of no WMD this last week or so, no WMD, it's nowhere to be found. Yet, isn't it unbelievable here that Saddam was getting billions out of this Food for Oil program? Where was that billions going? It was going to support other programs. I don't think there's any question that we're going to find out later on that money was flowing into Syria and in Iran to do the dirty deeds that Saddam could not do on his own soil. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think the WMD question is kind of a mute point because back in 98 when Clinton heaved all those cruise missiles into Iraq, that was the reason he gave for bombing Iraq with cruise missiles. And it's funny that if you read the blogs on the Internet, you'll find that most of the soldiers, when they went into Fallujah, I had read a number, 70% of the combatants in there were from foreign countries that they figured out from their paperwork that they caught them with. They were from Tunisia, Egypt, Jordan. They were from all around there. They're not really Iraqis. And, of course, if you think about it, it makes sense because these people are blowing up Iraqis, so...
I know. Hey, Bill, thanks for calling us this morning.
Day.
You too. Okay, listen, we've got Steve over in Salinas on the line. Steve, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi. Did I hear you say Kennedy was behind the Rather thing? That's what you said.
No, what I was trying to say is that we've got this basically, this axis of liberalism of Kennedy, Kerry, and Boxer that are forming together on the political front, and they're teaming with the liberal mainstream media to disinform the public.
No, you connected him with Rather, though.
Well, correctly. Oh, yeah, I'm sure he gets together with Rather. You don't think that Kennedy and Rather don't see each other at parties? Why they go to the same?
I mean, do you have a source for that or anything?
Well,
you sound like Rather himself making these accusations.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think so. But what's your point? Have you got a point to make?
Yeah. Where did Kennedy back him?
Oh, he loves CBS. He's the only guy that can get interviewed on CBS. Did you see George Bush or any Republicans being interviewed on CBS during the presidential election?
Where Kennedy backed the Rather fiasco. Do you have a source for that?
Oh, a source. It's absolutely, totally apparent as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay. Hey, Pat in Santa Cruz, what do you say on this? Pat, go ahead.
Okay, mine.
Yeah.
There's a couple points I'd like to make. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make them, but I'll try. First thing, I don't think the media is liberal. I think it is basically a product of corporate interests and consequently reflects Republican interests, which are basically the party most closely associated with corporate interests. Not the only one, but the one that is most closely associated with corporate interests. Consequently, that's why the corporations always give most of their campaign funding to the Republicans, not the Democrats.
So in other words, the big headlines make the big advertising dollars come to the paper, so the liberal fellows that are in there writing are just sort of disassociated from that. They're
You know, assuming, I think that's a pretty old statistic that the reporters are mostly liberals because that statistic's been floating around for many years, and the pay scales for the reporters has gone up enormously.
Have you ever worked at a newspaper?
I've owned several newspapers. As a matter of fact, some of the world's largest newspapers, so yes.
Well, now, okay. Now, Pat, now I'll tell you, I worked for a newspaper. Okay, but I worked for a newspaper. Because I worked for the radio division of the newspaper, so you know how we were treated, right? And just look at the different cultures, just for instance, in the broadcasting business. Radio stations, for instance, their salespeople are paid on commission. It's a highly, very tough business to do. Yet, at the newspaper, it's a simple full pay, a little bonus at the end of the year, and all of the benefits. It's a socialistic type of system at the newspaper.
So the corporate heads that actually are at the top of the newspaper just let the so-called liberal reporters run all over them. They don't dictate the policy and the editorial slant that's going to be presented in the paper. Is that what you want to say?
We'll get back to that. We got a break now. Okay, let's go to our break, and then we'll be back and try and see if we can't get our guest Bill Whalen on the phone to weigh in on all of this.
If you're in debt, living hand to mouth, tend to stress over finances, and are generally stuck in a rut, you should call this phone number and change your life starting right now. It will cost you 8.5 minutes of your time. 425-3090. 425-3090. Want to hear it again? 425-3090. Call it now. Get on the right track before you're old or dead. Do it now. Call 425-3090 and start your transformation into the new you, a happy, fulfilled person without money problems.
Here's my morning routine. Alarm goes off, hit snooze at least once, force self out of bed, put coffee on, go outside, get the Sentinel, shower, dress, drink my coffee, and let the Sentinel tell me some stories about the world around me. I usually don't think about it a lot because it's just part of my daily routine, but with the way the world is today, I'm glad to have a touchstone like the Santa Cruz Sentinel. The happy and the heart-wrenching, the justice and the injustice, it's all in there. Stories, not just the news, but the stories that help me make sense of what's going on in the world, and most importantly, right here in Santa Cruz County. News is news, but a story can touch your life, and the Sentinel always seems to find an angle that brings the story home. The Santa Cruz Sentinel, your news, your stories, every day.
For what to see and not to see, check out the Santa Cruz Style Entertainment Guide every Thursday and movie reviews every Friday in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Your news, your stories, and your entertainment guide.
Awesome. Hi, it's MZ. You know, being in the radio business here at KSCO, I got to tell you, there's never a dull moment. There's controversy, there's emotion, there's news, there's information. We discuss and bring to light issues. We have fun, we get silly, we get angry, but above all, we try to make a positive difference in the lives of our listeners. What I really want you to know about is one particular person who has made a truly positive difference in our lives here at KSCO. That would be Dennis, the owner and team captain of Day and Night Computer. We depend on computers for everything at KSCO. Dennis and his intimate family of high-tech professionals has made it possible for this station to grow and flourish as it never has before. Why? Because he and his crew are competent, attentive, fast, no-nonsense, and truly interested in solving your computer problems, whatever they are, right now, and without ripping you off or making your job a career. Call Dennis at 465-7340 if you want a quick and clean fix to your computer-related problem, and tell him MZ sent you. While you're at it, you'll probably make a new friend. Call Dennis at Day and Night Computer, 465-7340.
It's the best snow ever. But before you run up to the mountain, run by Play It Again Sports for winter clearance prices on everything you need to stay warm and have fun, including one of the best selections of new and used snowboards and clothing you'll find anywhere. Save your money for the mountain with Play It Again's winter clearance prices. And hey, don't forget Play It Again's new and used fitness equipment. Over 100 to choose from. Play it safe. Play it smart. Play It Again Sports on Soquel Avenue in downtown Soquel.
KSCO AM 1080, the station for intelligent people only. Stupid people must tune to another station immediately.
Oh, well, that was a new. Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Roger Pasquire sitting in for MZ on the Saturday morning special. I am really shocking myself this morning. Sitting down, I'm actually doing my own engineering, and they've got a whole new computer system in here to answer the phone with, and it's working great. Nothing else happens that could change that. Now, we're talking about the Bush, next 4 years of Bush, and the fact that the mainstream media and the axis of liberals, Kennedy, Kerry, and Boxer, are out there attempting with all of their might to put a tremendous negative spin on everything that George Bush is doing. And especially one of the big negative spins that have come out is this negative spin on President Bush's idea of freedom for everyone. And quoting from his speech, "All who live in tyranny and hopelessness can know. Wow. The United States will not ignore your oppression or excuse your oppressors. When you stand for liberty, we will stand with you." And, ladies and gentlemen, there have been comments on this already that just are unbelievable. Where do I have one of these right now? I pulled a comment off the air the other night that was just absolutely shocking to me. If I can find it here. Well, I don't have it in. Oh, here it is. That comment was said to be dreamy and disturbing. Dreamy and disturbing. Another shot from the liberal group out there. Let's go to Bill in Santa Cruz. We're still looking for Bill Whalen. I know he's going to be up in a minute here if we can get him on the phone pretty soon, hopefully. But Bill in Santa Cruz, what do you say about that comment that President Bush said freedom for the rest of the world is going to be good for us, too?
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. However, you used the word ignore a minute ago, from out of the speech. And the fact is that what President Bush does is immediately ignore the countries he pretends to be bringing freedom to. He never mentioned Iraq once. So if we come for freedom, here's what's interesting. You mentioned you let a little truth slip through, which Republicans really don't do too often. You mentioned that the Vietnam War was actually probably a bad idea, and the press, that bad press, that liberal press, they had the temerity to tell the truth.
Hey, wait a second. I'm an independent. I don't go all the way to the Republican side. I don't go all the way to the ultra conservative side. But I'm talking about the ultra liberals.
Here's the thing. You are uncomfortable with the truth. When Barbara Boxer asks Kennedy a couple of tough questions and asks for a real answer, you call her the axis of evil. You didn't say the word evil, But, you know, some of us are bright enough to know.
Axis of liberal. The axis of liberal.
And liberal is evil. We know what you're doing. Nobody's that stupid that you think we are. You think liberals are stupid, and that's the one mistake you make. The one thing we can say about Republicans is not that they're stupid, but that they just say things that aren't true and expect stupider people to believe them.
What do you say? That's what the Democrats have been doing out there. The ultra-liberals are out there flashing all... It is.
Oh, okay, so the liberal... It's,
look at CBS. What was that? What was that comment from CBS this last week? What was that all about? That whole debacle?
Do you know what the word follow-up question means?
Well, what does it mean to you?
It means that when the press asks the president, who's supposed to be the guy in charge of everything, a question, and he doesn't answer it, he does not allow follow-up questions. When a president is scared to talk to the people truthfully, when they pay guys like you $250,000 to propagandize us, you've got people who lie and don't tell the truth. Nobody can trust George Bush, and everybody around the world knows it. They constantly lie to the American people.
How can they not trust? They know exactly what he's going to do. He is going in there. He's going to clean out the...
WMDs.
No, he's going to clean out the insurgents.
No!
He's going to get this country. He's going to give Iraq freedom. They're going to have a democratic government. And this is the best thing for us that ever happened, as far as I'm concerned.
It was a lie, everything he said on going into Iraq.
So what was the truth? The truth to you is that, well, he did it for oil and his friends.
So now you're putting words in my mouth.
Well, sure, you're putting them in mine. Go ahead. Now what?
These are my words. Your president is a liar and an evil man.
Oh,
now, I can prove it. Would you like me to?
No, you can't prove that. Well, how can
you
be an evil... What, because he held up his...
Prove it.
He held up his hand like the longhorns, and that's supposed to be a sign of the devil.
That was another thing that came out in the press. That's what conservatives do. They try to find something ridiculous and pretend that real liberals believe that. You're never going to win if you're just into propaganda. And how do you explain the fact that this administration is so against free speech, so against the truth? We have an energy policy that is a secret. You really back Cheney in keeping our energy policy secret from the rest of America?
Who's keeping it secret?
You don't know that four courts have asked Cheney to give up the notes of the energy meetings that he refuses?
Listen, what they're trying to do is put an oil drilling platform the size of a football field in Alaska to help us out.
Changing the subject.
No, it doesn't. It goes right to the heart of the subject.
Live with the truth. That's
it's the ridiculous.
Republicans and conservatives can't stand truth.
It's the environmentalist wackos that are out there that are causing us to have the $2.50.
Wackos!
Yes, and your neocon friends, too.
Oh, the neocons are our friends.
Yes, goodbye. Okay, thanks a lot, Bill, from Santa Cruz. Anyway, sure. We haven't found our my man yet, Bill Whalen. We just can't find him. Is he just not there, Aaron? He's not answering. Well, he probably didn't want to answer. He could have forgot, whatever, but we'll just keep on going. Okay, let's see. We've got Mike in Santa Cruz. Mike, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, your last caller reminds me that I do live in Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah, no.
And thank God, you know, I travel enough to know that most of the country isn't like our last caller.
Yeah, I know.
It is so interesting. It amazes me that KSCO is the beacon of hope that it is, because, boy, is he surrounded by... He's got alligators nipping at his heels all the time. Michael Zwirling is to be commended.
This poor little area right down here is designated red. You know, it's shocking red.
Tiny little area, but it is there. No, I find it so interesting. I thought Bush's speech was clear and concise, and liberals hate that.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a bold vision, and he did reference that Clinton didn't do a damn thing for 8 years.
Well, I guess I don't understand what's so wrong with freedom from other people. The ultra-liberals go, no, they don't want freedom. They want to have these tyranny type of organizations running them that are, torturing women, torturing people. They think that's just fine. We'll just let that go. And then the idea, well, again, I still got to tell you, it doesn't matter. WMD, it wouldn't have taken very long if we hadn't done anything. Say, nothing had happened. We hadn't gone into Iraq 2 years later now, or 3 years almost. We would be sitting on top of a powder keg gentleman who had been taking oil for food money, billions of dollars, undoubtedly shipping it off to some other area, Iran, Libya, certainly Syria. We know that they're big on, and these guys would have been making it. And then, you know, it wouldn't have taken much. You don't need a very long bomb to hit the Saudi oil fields. And I guarantee you, if you had had a Saudi oil field bomb or some type of bomb go off in that area, you'd have $80 a barrel oil, $100 a barrel oil. And then let's see what the ultra-liberals would be doing then. They'd be all running around, oh, how do I get to work? How do I do it? I can't. It's $10 a gallon. And then they'd be blaming him for not have taken action. So,
exactly. I thought it was a good speech. And, you know, in the first 4 years, in the first few months, we kept hearing how stupid George Bush was.
Yeah.
Well, the poor dumbbell somehow managed to gain seats in the House in 2002, gain seats in 2004, plus win the presidency. Boy, he's a real moron.
Oh, no question about it, isn't it? Isn't it unbelievable? Well, it's actually part and parcel the whole, I think it's the Michael Moore thing. I think it was the Hollywood group I think that really hurt Kerry more than helped him, because they just came across we hate Bush.
Like our last caller do more to help Republicans than they do their own cause.
Yeah.
Because you have to, the Democrats still don't stand for anything.
No.
After two elections and all these House seats, because even if you look at it, the Democrats haven't even done that well in California. Look what happened to Gray Davis.
Oh.
And then, let's go a little further. Even if you look at the proposition, the Democrats did not have any victories out of even the proposition.
Well, you know, it's already known that California, the amount of money we put into the federal government, we get the least out of one of the states. I think we're one of the states that gets the least back from the federal government. And it's no wonder, because we've had these ultra-liberal guys up there running the state, and they talk down the Republicans, and they talk down conservatism, and they want to spend. And so what ends up happening? You get Boxer to go in and, like, twist the knife with a stupid idea of, we're going to stop the Electoral College from going through. I'm going to make a big deal out of that, and then make another arse out of herself in questioning Condi. Where do you think that's going to get us? We're not going to get any money in California. Schwarzenegger's doing uphill battle, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, he's doing sainted work in terrible conditions. And why someone like that would take on such a thankless job, but we have to be thankful that he's willing to try.
Right.
And I think he is making headway. And then we read yesterday about our new chancellor at UCSC getting her partner a job, or somehow the partner ended up with a job for $200,000. And then they cry that there's not enough money spent on education. And I look at that and I go, boy.
Oh.
They just make a conservative like me tighten up my belt just a little bit more.
Mike, thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
We've got, we're going to take Maxwell in Pebble Beach because he's on a cell phone. Max, sorry. Max, are you there? No, I guess.
Yeah, good day.
Oh, good. Max, you're on the cell phone. Okay, what's on your mind?
Well, there was just a couple points. I mean, Bill in Santa Cruz needs to up his medication. I think that was evident, but... this notion that the Republicans are rich and the Democrats are somehow the poor downtrodden, that's just got to go. Let's see. Feinstein's one of the richest senators. Boxer is super wealthy with her husband as a lobbyist. Kerry is the absolute rich dog in the Senate. And then, of course, there's poor, impoverished Ted Kennedy. So what is this crap?
I don't know. It seems like the liberal group just wants to disassociate itself with the fact that their presidential candidate was, you know, nothing more than, well, what would you call him? Somebody that takes an opportune moment and gets himself hooked up with somebody like Theresa Heinz Kerry, who's got billions, shovels him into a new home, has cars, and that he doesn't drive. You know, he doesn't. Well, he's got seven homes, seven mansions.
Yeah.
Let's put that a private jet, yachts.
He's got his own butler, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, you know, and $1,000 haircut. You know, the guy doesn't have one nose nostril hair. But anyway, listen, Bob, thanks.
Point number two.
Yeah, go ahead.
This whole notion that the corporate donations to political funding only goes to Republicans is absolute bunk. Those cats give money to both sides equally. because they want to be they're on the winning team, whoever wins.
Right, right, right.
Mm. You know, this notion of our free speech is being curtailed by whom and where? I don't know one activist that's been arrested for free speech lately. Anybody name me one?
Yeah, well, I think it's just that we don't want to listen to dumb speech, and that's what we get from the liberal groups. We get dumb ideas, and they think, oh, well, they're turning us off. Well, yes, we're turning you off because it's so ridiculous. Okay.
And final point. Yeah. Everybody who I've ever heard on television that has known George Bush personally for 20, 30 years say the guy is genuine, honest-hearted. We all know that he's beat alcoholism, for God's sake. So all this stuff that he's liar and evil, I mean, you watch the guy walking around. I just don't see the horn.
Well, I never could figure out why they made such a big deal out of his Coast Guard service.
National Guard service,
because what the heck?
He was a fighter pilot, for God's sake.
I know. He learned how to do everything. He went to all the meetings, and they were making it. And the fact was is that the country wasn't looking to a National Guard guy to run the country. They were looking to a president, and the last 4 years, in my opinion, was a heck of a lot more experience in running the country than John Kerry got from being lieutenant in Vietnam. He tried to push that off on us. That was a total ruse and a fraud.
Well, and thank God he didn't turn the Oval Office into a porn movie. I'm over now.
Thanks a lot, Maxwell. Okay, we've got Bob in Santa Cruz. Bob, what say you?
Good morning. I wanted to talk about weapons of mass destruction. That phrase was used as the provocation to action. Now, granted, we are there, but I think if we look back and we look back at what was said, history will someday have to answer these questions, and I don't believe they will be answered during Bush's term. But afterwards, we're going to have to look at what was said and reflect upon it, because I don't believe that we would have gone into action in Iraq without the weapons of mass destruction provocation.
It probably wouldn't have been as quick. We probably might have eventually done it.
Well, those are probabilities. Now, let me give one quote, if I might. This is from Vice President Dick Cheney. Simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us. All right, and there's a couple of quotes that are interesting by Bush, President Bush, and Condoleezza Rice that refer to let's not wait for the smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud. So these phrases, this language, this push for weapons of mass destruction was very calculated. Whether the intelligence was correct or not, they were certain. They put out the certitude to the American people, and if it were not for that certitude, it is unlikely that the Senate would have gone along.
But Bob, I guess, that may be right, but I don't see how you, as a vice president or a president, could sit there and look at the information that was coming in from the CIA, from a man named Tenet, who was put in by a Democratic president.
I was young during the Bay of Pigs, but I remember we had photographs of missile silos. Now, when the vice president says no doubt, when the president of the United States says let's not wait for the mushroom cloud smoking gun, that's strong language. What I'm saying is that at some point in the history of this of the Iraqi issue, that these issues of the provocation are going to have to be answered.
Well,
I don't believe they will be answered during Bush's office. What they've done is basically slapped this issue aside. They're no longer looking for weapons of mass destruction. It's in the past.
It is.
And now it's on to we're democratizing Iraq. Now that was not the provocation that we went into war about.
Well, I don't think WMD was...
That is essentially dishonest.
No, WMD was not the only thing, though.
I am not anti-Bush. But this level of dishonesty, is going to burn in until it's eventually answered.
I think you
succeed in sloughing it off for 4 years.
You know, I think you overdo it with the dishonesty part. I think that they took a look at information that was coming in from all around the world. Everybody believed they had it. Look, it's a big desert out there. He's known to have buried things. They've got huge underground bunkers. Huge underground bunkers.
No doubt.
And
no
just
doubt.
Look and look at the and look at these bombing. Yeah, but hold it, wait a second. Look at these bombing that they found. 500 of these bomb factories in Fallujah alone. They had it all set up to fall back into the city, of course, and then sit there and work their way out of it in some type of a guerrilla warfare type of thing and street-to-street fighting, which they're finding is not working for them because, obviously, Fallujah, for instance, is a pretty quiet city right now. It's the people are coming back in. They're starting to rebuild. In fact, they were starting to rebuild one half of the city while they were still bombing the other half.
Weapons of mass destruction, no doubt. Smoking gun, mushroom cloud, come on. We're talking dishonesty. Now, I am not anti-Bush. I'm not even anti-Iraqi war. But we have got to look at the provocations that put this country into war up front and above board without sloughing it off and derailing and directing the conversation into the fact that we're there now and we better get with the program now and we're democratizing and all this great stuff. We went to war because the president and the vice president and the national security advisor said that we better not wait for the mushroom cloud.
Okay.
And there is no doubt. Now, that's not maybe. That's no doubt.
Okay,
that's,
we know. There's leadership. No WMD.
That's leadership telling the Senate and the American people that if you don't go along with this, we're going to have to deal with a mushroom cloud as a result of your inability to act.
Are you telling me that if we had not done anything and Saddam Hussein was still in power and still in power and still getting oil money, that food for oil money that he was using and accumulating millions and billions and passing out things to his friend, you don't think that he still had in the back of his mind, I'm going to get America,
well,
I'm going to get you?
You know, can I answer that? What's your name, first of all?
Roger.
Roger. I don't know, Roger. I'm not that good of a psychic, okay, to tell you what Saddam Hussein was thinking back in 2003. But I do know this. We were amassing troops during the time that the heat was being raised on the issue of weapons of mass destruction. And logistically, we wanted to launch the war before the heat, the temperature rose in the desert because we were afraid of what might happen. Were chemical agents launched. That was the bottom line. The bottom line, in my opinion, was that WMD was used because it was going to work as a provocation.
Hey, you know, and if you had been wrong and we would have all been out there yelling and screaming that he did nothing.
That's not true. Am I wrong that WMD was wrong?
No, you're not wrong. There was no WMD they found, but it could be anywhere. It could be in Syria. It could be in Iran. It certainly was being financed by the guy. You don't think that Saddam Hussein...
Cheney said no doubt.
Money is WMD, sir. Money is WMD for Saddam Hussein. He just has to spend it and give it to Libya.
That's not the no doubt that Cheney's talking
about.
Hey,
Libya even admitted
to dodge this issue. It's an honest, sincere issue. The American people are going to have to address the fact that the president, the vice president, and Condoleezza Rice used phraseology that said they were certain.
Okay.
No doubt.
Okay, Bob, thanks
Thank
a lot
you.
For calling. I still think you're a little bit, I think you're more of a 9-10-er. I still don't think you understand what happened on 9/11. Anyway, Sam in Aptos, what's going on?
Hey, I don't know what he wants to call them, weapons of mass destruction. But when Colin Powell went to the UN, he had us listen to tapes of people who were scrambling to go hide them and get rid of them. They buried their jets in the desert. They brought Soviet specialists over to take over the Syrian border crossings at certain times while there was mass truck movement. They found the trucks that they said were the chemical trucks, and they said, well, that could be made for helium, but anyone knows that helium you can go down and buy and put it in a tank.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to do a weather balloon. You don't need to carry a truck around that makes helium. And they found 24 sarin gas artillery shells. They used one to blow one up near some GIs.
And they were starting to build rockets that go a much longer distance.
Exactly.
We
they
found
had
all of that.
They had the motors for all that. They don't want to talk about stuff that's dual use. the stuff that makes sarin gas is the same stuff that makes RAID in different concentrations.
Right.
And also, the guy wrote the book, the Iraqi scientist, of he had a nuclear centrifuge buried under his rose bush. Now, this is not oddball stuff. This is stuff that's been in the national news, albeit as hidden as can be. But I don't know what that adds up to somebody who thinks that makes a lie. Because if George Bush is a liar, then every major Democrat is a liar.
Right. That it was all for oil.
Al Gore's a liar. Bill Clinton's a liar. We know that. We know the previous person, too. But also Kerry and every major senator. So it doesn't even make sense, his argument in thinking that.
Yeah,
we have to come to grips with the fact the president lied when all this stuff is right in front of his face. When you're an ignorant bigot and all you can think about is how much you hate somebody, you're never going to see the truth.
I know.
And Santa Cruz is just full of a bunch of hateful bigots that will, this is where they are, and this is what they look like. And they're not really around that much anywhere else, thank God.
Well, you know, one of the big problems, I think, with liberals on the war isn't really whether it was WMD or any of that. It's the fact that we're spending money in Iraq that they think should be really spent taking care of their welfare society for them. You understand what I'm saying? They see that money going over there, and they go, oh, my God, she's spending all the money that we need to live on. It's ridiculous. We aren't going to go anywhere without a world that gets this terrorism thing under control. The economy isn't going to go anywhere. Free worlds, we're still going to have it's never going to be totally gone. We've had terrorism since the beginning of time. But let's face it, everybody, we've got to be steadfast. We can't cut and run now. We're in it. And no matter what you think it was for, I think it's working. It's going to work out to our benefit. Anyway, thanks, Samuel, for calling us.
You bet. You have a great day.
Okay, you too. Okay, we've got Jeff calling from a black helicopter. I hope you're not over the top of us, possibly getting ready to drop something on the station or something.
Well, no, I bought this used black helicopter from Halliburton, and I figured I'd go over and maybe try to get refueled up in Alaska, but they won't let me land anywhere. So
I believe
I
understand.
Hover above Santa Cruz.
So what are you thinking today?
Well, you know, a lot of these people are critics of the war. They don't realize that, they probably do realize that they don't want to be intellectually honest enough to admit it, that at the close of the first Gulf War, the conflict that we had with Saddam Hussein, he signed an armistice. He signed an agreement, and he didn't live up to that agreement. There was a ceasefire agreement is what it was. And the deal was is that he would allow us to go in there and see what he had and destroy it for us to discontinue the military action against him.
Right, right.
And because he violated that agreement, that was a legal right for the United States and any signatory nation to that agreement to invade Iraq.
No, except for the French and the Russians who were getting paid under the table and didn't want anything to change.
Yeah, I just find it very interesting that, you have all these critics out there who claim they're for human rights here in the United States and all these other things, the condescending liberal types.
Okay.
And but yet, when you have a bunch of people in Iraq who are under this dictator, and in other places like of course Libya and a few other countries over there, they don't want us to do anything about it because it's going to cost them their money. You got all the Santa Cruz liberals who drive your luxury model cars and probably commute in and out of Silicon Valley and drive up our housing prices, but yet they don't want us spend the money to defend our country, and I just find it very interesting.
I understand where you're coming from. Well, thanks for calling, Jeff. You're in the helicopter now?
What?
Are you in the helicopter?
Yep.
Where are you at?
I'm hovering above Santa Cruz.
I don't hear like a helicopter sound like I do in the traffic reports or anything.
Well, it's a stealth helicopter. Remember, I bought it. Yeah, I bought it used from Halliburton.
Oh, I got it now.
Yeah, hey. Cheney used to use it to go back and forth between the Middle East and whatever he did. With
yes,
the,
and
with
complete
the oil company.
Anonymity never was seen.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Jeff. Thanks. Have a good time in your black helicopter.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Well, we're about 10 minutes before. Do we want to go to break now, or we've got Bill Whalen on the phone? What do we want to do, Aaron? Go to break or? Okay, well, just hang on. Let's get Bill. Let me see. He's just finding us here. Bill, how are you?
Hey, Roger, 1,000 apologies for not being able to get on the phone earlier.
No problem. Well, we've got a few minutes left. We've been talking, you heard a little bit about from the last caller, just basically the Bush administration's new policy, of course, for freedom in the world, and that this is, you know, being torn down by the press. It's being torn down by what I call the access of liberal, which is not Feinstein, but Boxer, Kennedy, and Kerry. Who were working their little deeds this last week. What do you think? Can't the country just get over this and get into a positive set? Don't we have a really great opportunity that ultra-liberals just want to sort of put their finger on and smash?
Well, I hate to be a cynic here, but I'm afraid it would take a very large event to overcome the partisan rift. In other words, I think we'd have to take another 9/11. Something of such a shock and large scale, and just blow to the nation's breadbasket that people would have to just kind of stop their usual business, usual partisan bickering.
In other words, somebody's got to get hit at the rail crossing before they put up the arm, right?
Well, and it's kind of a sad thing to say when you're saying, in essence, that a lot of people have to die for politicians to knock off the partisan bickering. But, you know, I think, you know, just a lot of this just has to do with current feelings in the country, plus also just especially feelings toward George Bush, which, when you think about it, was really also how a lot of Republicans approached Bill Clinton. I think people out there just can't get past Bush, and I was noticing this on the reaction to his inaugural speech, which, if you read it, I think it's a very wonderfully written document, I think, and I think it's the kind of document that historians are going to go back and have a lot of fun parsing 40 and 50 years from now. But the fact that it came out of George Bush's mouth just, you know, kind of just opens up the floodgate to all the usual complaints.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we're talking with Bill Whalen, who's with the Hoover Institute and is frequently on Fox TV. At least I've seen you a couple times on there, Bill. Which is really kind of
MSNBC last night. I get around.
You do well. So you know, what do we have to do to turn these people around? That, you know, still focusing on WMD and still in their mindset that way. Is there any way that the president, you just got to stay the course, and eventually things will work out?
Yeah, I think the president has to just keep his head down and go about doing his business, soldiering on, as they would say in the military. Keep in mind that the most important thing about the second term for George Bush right now is that the Democrats don't have subpoena power.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Well, if the one way in which you can make a president's life miserable is if you have subpoena power in Congress. If you have a majority of Congress, which means you control the committees, Roger, which means that you can turn around and investigate and subpoena the administration left and right and really kind of drag down the administration doing it that way. They don't run the Congress, the Democrats don't. They don't run the committees, and they can't control the subpoena process out of the Hill. So they can't bring them down that way. So I think what the president has to do is look at it this way. The Democrats don't have the votes to stop what he wants to do in terms of most issues. They can filibuster, sure, and they can try to break up Republican majorities, but they don't control the process.
Mm-hmm.
As for the war on terrorism, as for foreign policy, history is going to judge him, not the Democratic Party, but history. And he'll know 20 or 30 years from now whether or not what he did was right or not. The analogy to this would be Harry Truman in Korea in 1952. Harry Truman entered America and got us involved in what at the time was not a popular war necessarily. Korea was a strange conflict. It was a police action, not a declared war. It bogged down. It was messy. There were questions at all times what we were doing there. Was this the right thing to do? But it was Harry Truman using the Truman Doctrine, trying to stop communism in its tracks. Mm-hmm. Truman leaves office a very unpopular man, but history remembers Truman as doing the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about that. You look back at that and you say, that ended the war. But in today's day and age, imagine if a president had to make that decision today. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, but, it's a tough thing to say, because what you're telling the president of the United States is basically, look, you're going to get criticized and you may end up office not being very popular, but you have to trust that you've done the right thing historically. I think Bush has enough core convictions where he can do this. And that was one thing about his speech that I did like. You know, there was a certain authenticity. I don't sound too much of a George Bush cheerleader, because I can find fault with him like everybody else. But there was a certain authenticity to it. You go back and read inaugural addresses, Roger, and a lot of times you find presidents up there just, you know, kind of giving you gobbledygook. Clinton in 1997 had a line where he said, government is not the problem, and government's not the solution. And he said, but both those are wrong. What the heck does that mean?
It's
a wrong comment, because, you know, sometimes government is the solution, and sometimes government is the problem. But, you know, politicians get up in these inaugurals, and they try to get so caught up in fancy words and alliterations that they end up just kind of, you know, babbling on with gobbledygook. If you read the Bush speech, I think it really did come from the heart in that respect. I look at that, and I think, you know, what he said, I think by God, is actually what this guy thinks.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I feel about Bush, is that I listen to him and I get a feeling that he is really going to stay with this. And I think that this changes people in the world. It really has the insurgent movement in Iraq perplexed. They don't know how to deal with his real steadfastness. And at the same time, they're getting helped by the mainstream press that everything is going bad, and boy, we're just having, and we're it's going to be a huge amount of bombings and insurgents. They like get everybody fired up to go out and bomb people. The most unbelievable thing. And I was analogizing that to the Tet Offensive back in the Vietnam War. The press did the same thing there. We had a very successful offensive there and almost had the North Vietnamese kicked out, ready to go to the table and negotiate, and yet the press was, oh, it was a disaster, it was terrible, it was fake, and all of this. And this is what the group want. They want nothing more than to see Bush fail and, consequently, the country fail.
Well, people will pick apart the Bush doctrine, such as it's written in that address, saying that, look, you know, the standard he puts a country up to is way too high. There's no way we're going to go around to every country that does bad thing to its people and force them to change what they do. And they're right. You know, we're not going to go into Pakistan anytime soon and shake them up and say, stop doing things to your people. We're certainly not to go to mainland China and say, stop forcing your people to have abortions and things like that. We're not going to muck around in their business. But what I think Bush did, Roger, was I think he laid out a very important historical marker, just like FDR laid out an important historical marker when he issued the Four Freedoms speech, just like Truman issued an important historical marker when he talked about containing communism, just like Kennedy issued a very important marker when he talked about, you know, bear any burden, pay any cost. Now, I think Bush has done that, too.
And I think that it is absolutely what we have to do in a day and age when we don't know if the guy standing next to us is got a bomb strapped around him, and we're just set up for disaster if we don't follow through. And so I just can't agree with you more. I think that, of course, we're going to have to convince the mainstream press somehow to change this way of thinking. I don't know if we can.
Yeah. Now, well, that said, I do think he probably needs to exercise a little humility. I have a piece in the San Francisco Chronicle on this where I talk about Lincoln, because Bush and Lincoln are fascinating comparisons. We're up against the hour here, so I won't ramble on too long. But if you look at Lincoln, in 1865, Abraham Lincoln gave an inaugural address in which he did not say that God favored the North in the Civil War, but he talked about the continuation of the Civil War as being a matter of God's will. In other words, he said the Civil War is, in some respects, out of my hands. It's up to God to kind of decide what it sends. On the other hand, but Lincoln was fascinating, Roger, in that Lincoln was not a Christian. He did not belong to a Christian church. But yet he was talking, you know, in very religious overtones. Mm-hmm. Bush, who, as we know, is the evangelical Methodist, you know, he's not shy about talking about religious overtones, too. So I think people, again, just, I think they get caught up a little bit too much just in George Bush himself, and they start talking about the religiosity of the speech and so forth.
Hey, Bill, thanks for joining us. We got to go to the top of the hour news. We'll hope to have you back. And next hour, Carnivore. Right now, it's KSEO Santa Cruz.
USA Radio Network News, this is Cynthia King. Road crews with the D.C. Department of Transportation, VDOT, and Maryland State Highway Administration have their work cut out for them today as they try to keep major roads and highways clear of snow.
This could be a big one, and with the wind, that will compound the problems, so they'll be out there working continuously until we can get this situation under control.
Robert Flanagan, Secretary of Transportation for the state of Maryland, he says they've got more than 2,000 personnel out on the high
time. I'll go back to the Saturday special with Roger Pasquire.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSEO has the inside track.
I feel like I'm in an Aqua Velva commercial or something. Hey, listen, nice to have you. This is Roger Pasquire sitting in for MZ today on the morning special. I thought that one comment during the news, you know, locally dense. That makes sense around here.
KSEO Radio. Bye.
I know they were talking about fog, but anyway. Okay, Roger Pasquire with you today. We're giving you the Pasquire perspective, and this hour We're going to be talking about carnivore, and I'm going to tell you about that in a few minutes. But first, we have an editorial with Kay Zwirling.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay Zwirling.
Listen to this. Isn't there a disconnect somewhere? UCSC's new chancellor, Denise D. Denton, will receive a salary of $275,000 per year, plus moving expenses of $68,750. She also just managed to have her longtime partner, Professor Gretchen Kolohe, also hired at UCSC for $192,000 per year. This while UC student fees have just been raised by about 29%, and that's a real hardship for many. This also while lower bracket UC employees receive minimal wages and are having difficulty getting even small raises. UCSC this past year received gifts of around $35 million, probably from alumni, from whom they solicit all the time. Likewise, our own county administrative officer, Susan Moriello, when I looked several years ago, gave herself $192,000 per year, same as the Vice President of the United States, plus a hefty pension for herself and the Board of Supervisors, who at that time were giving themselves close to $100,000 per year for two or three meetings per month. No doubt they give themselves yearly cost of living raises. In addition, all this while many of our county needy, like stroke victims, are told there are no longer funds in the county coffers to continue to give them free bus or cab transportation for shopping or doctor's visits. This pattern of heartless, shameful greed by those on top in the public sector from the federal, state, county, and local levels is occurring all over our country. Those on top take the cream for themselves first in the form of high salaries, high pensions, high health insurance premiums, which we the people pay for, and at the same time, they all cry poverty and ask for more and more funds to get the job done. It's all so immoral. What's happening to fair-mindedness and sensitivity in our society? For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay Zwirling.
$68,000 in moving expenses? Oh, my. What, they move the whole house, not just the furniture. It really wrangles me, too, when I see these type of expenditures going on. It's not just local government. You see it happening here with the colleges and all over. No way the state can get control of its funding as long as local jurisdictions and people are spending wildly on weird projects. I know they've got one over in Pacific Grove, a golf course over there project. Unbelievable they spent the money on that while the city is in such trouble. You just can't get control of anything if you're going to do that type of a thing. Okay, this hour we are going to talk about carnivore. And, well, it's not just carnivore, but basically, you may or may not know what carnivore is. My guest is going to tell you in a second. Hopefully we'll get him up on the line. Professor Harold Krent from the Chicago School of Law. What we want to talk about this hour is the growing industrial security complex, of which carnivore was actually one of those, a system set up to getting to know the terrorist, and in a lot of people's mind, getting to know yourself a lot more too. Well, the whole idea, of course, this is about Patriot Act, which everybody has big concerns over, and that's why I wanted to bring in my guest today, Professor Harold Krent of the Chicago School of Law. Actually, Kent State, is that right, too? It's Chicago-Kent State.
Chicago-Kent College of Law.
Kent College of Law. Okay, it's not Kent State. Okay, right. Nice to have you with us, Professor. And, I've been kind of talking a little bit about carnivore. I've been mentioning carnivore in the prior hour. And you were involved in carnivore.
The Justice Department was concerned about the FBI's use of carnivore to get the sense of what the FBI was doing in terms of eavesdropping electronically. They didn't know the audit control systems. They were confused about the incidence of that, and so they asked for an independent group to perform an evaluation.
Now, what, to tell them what carnivore was, you know, what it is.
Carnivore is a system which we understand, as of this week, may no longer be in existence, but it is a system that the FBI used to intercept email traffic from suspects, as well as to trace their web navigation activities, so that if you were a perceived terrorist, or if you were a kidnapper, or a child molester, they would get a court order and take it to an internet service provider and physically install hardware, which would then try to separate out your email traffic or web navigation traffic, including all of the content of the emails to and from, and as well as the substance, to see if they could follow the trail linked to the alleged criminal conduct.
Hmm. So this system is now going out. They are not allowing it to stay in its current form, or it's going to be in some type of form?
It's good news and bad news. I mean, I think the bad news is that, the good news is that certainly the government has to keep up with terrorists, and one of the ways to keep up with terrorists is to develop new technological ways to anticipate and track what terrorists are doing. The bad news is what they announced is that they were no longer using their own system for trapping and tracing this communication, or wiretapping, if you will, on the web. Instead, what they were doing was to use commercial materials, commercial software, so that they would go to an internet service provider and say, you find the stuff for us. And the difficulty there is that, do we trust the internet service providers to have eavesdropping materials that limit the curtailment of liberty? So, for instance, ISPs may be reading the entire communication as opposed to just header information on emails, or they may be reading not just emails from you, but maybe to your son or maybe to your spouse. So if we don't have scrutiny on the kind of email traffic that's being intercepted, we really don't know what kind of protections are there for the average person.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you protect the country if you don't have a system like this? For goodness sakes, people are afraid, you know, they can't get lost anymore. You're out, you're at a, for instance, you go to Las Vegas and you're at a casino and there's cameras every 10 feet. You go to a bank, you go, actually in some areas, down the street now, walking down streets, and you can be seen. The other day, of course, we saw it wasn't very good surveillance camera, that poor young lady who was abducted. Where was it, in Virginia?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Texas.
And, you know, I don't know what good that did. They still needed a security person there, because let's look at the fact that when you saw that picture, all you saw is somebody running across the parking lot. There was no way to really tell who exactly it is or get a license plate number and those types of things. I know there's more sophisticated equipment out there that we can use to do that, but I don't see how we can get around not giving up some of these liberties in order to stop these guys from killing us.
Well, I think we have to give up some, and I think we've seen that at airports, for instance. I think all of us agree that we have to suffer the indignities of the searching, the waiting in lines, in order to become more safe and a little more secure. I mean, they don't work perfectly, but I think most of us would think that that's a very important, and we're willing to give up that kind of privacy. But at the same time, what's critical is that we have given less attention to what I might call audit controls. And give the two examples you've just gone over. Mm-hmm. The first is the cameras that are posted in public streets in Chicago and Orlando and Baltimore and other cities in the country. Well, it's great to have it, but the question is, who gets access to these tapes? And how long can they be stored? Are they searchable? All these kinds of questions, which are very important, because one can always imagine that someone would take these pictures and use them for improper purposes.
Right.
Who's a boyfriend, spouse, whatever.
Who's watching the watchers?
Exactly. And the same thing is true with the surveillance. Because if we don't know what type of information has been obtained, about whom and to what extent, that's where the danger comes in. So I think you're absolutely right in saying we have to invest in technology, we have to be willing to limit our freedoms, but at the same time, we have to monitor the monitors or watch the watchers, in order to get some assurance that our own privacies won't be needlessly eroded.
Now, if there are any callers out or anybody out there that would like to join in on our conversation about the Patriot Act, about any of these types of subjects that deal with electronic eavesdropping, the hassles at the airport, one of them I want to talk to you about in a second, Professor, the library situation. I know that's been a very controversial one, and Ashcroft came out and said they actually caught somebody through a library detection. But our number here is 479-1080, 831-479-1080. What about the situation with the libraries? That's been very controversial.
This is one of the aspects of the Patriot Act which has drawn the most fire, and I think deservedly so. Under the Act, the law enforcement agency can go to a library, ask for subscriber records, and without any kind of reasonable suspicion or probable cause, they can just ask for it. They just have a hunch or an intuition that Roger Pasquire has been doing something too much with fertilizer and wants to see whether you've taken out any books on fertilizer or not. And so they can do that. And the library is then forbidden from telling anybody that there has been a request for this information. And the same thing is true at bookstores. So we have a situation where this is cutting close to our First Amendment freedoms. Someone can look and see what we're reading without any kind of suspicion at all, and I agree that tips the scales too far. This is not a situation where we have a suspect, where we're trailing a terrorist. This is just a hunch, and we should be very nervous if law authorities can do too much based on hunches.
Now, we've got palm scans, eye scans, fingerprints, facial scans now. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar business that's coming into fruition. Is it going to, you know, take on the size of a two-headed dinosaur beast or something that we can't control? That's the scary part.
I think that there is a real challenge to all of us from the introduction of electronic means of making records. It used to be, as you said, you know, it doesn't have to be in the Las Vegas room, but in most places in the country, we're relatively anonymous. If you have to, every time you pass a toll on a highway or go into a government building or even go to a mall, you must show a scan of some kind of frequency that they can then capture you. The question will be, will there be a great database that could, at a moment's notice, create then a picture of all of your actions? Can we see that you were at the mall from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock? You were on the highway at both because you paid a toll at 2 o'clock and at 4 o'clock. You were in a government building at 6 o'clock. And once these records are out there about all of us, and they do good, but once the records are out there, who gets access to them and for what purpose? And just to give you a couple stories, nobody's really thought about this, but here in Illinois and in some other states, divorce attorneys are trying to seek toll road records to see whether or not they can show that a husband or wife was out where they weren't supposed to be, presumably having an affair. And when they created these kinds of records, nobody thought about that.
Ooh.
And the same thing is true in cars. We have these little GPS-type systems, and now insurance companies are trying to subpoena them in order to determine whether you were at fault before an accident.
Professor, hang on a second. We're going to go to a break. I'm Roger Pasquire. This is the Saturday Morning Special. I'm filling in for MZ, and our guest is Professor Harold Krent of the Chicago Kent College of Law, and we're talking about our need to rethink the right to privacy, the Patriot Act, and everything else. So stand by. Our phone number is 479-1080 if you've got a comment. Right now we're going to go to break, and we'll be right back.
Now you can live your dream and share it. RVs of Merit.
The dollar is down, which means you'll pay more and get less in Europe and Asia. But the dollar is up at RVs of Merit, which means now's the perfect time to see America the Beautiful in a new or pre-owned RV. RVs of Merit is your Winnebago and Alpha Sea dealer and has over 5 acres of RVs, trailers, and Weekend Warrior toy haulers available right now. With today's rock-bottom interest rates, you'll drive an RV home for less than the monthly cost of a new car. So hurry in to RVs of Merit today. Next year's rates will make you look like a genius.
Come to Scotts Valley, the door to your adventure. When you enter our friendly RV center, now you can live your dream and share it. RV
bees of merit. Our bees of merit.
Hi, this is Don Fredrickson from GotNet, Monterey Bay's highest value internet service provider since 1994. Our sharp and friendly support staff is here 7 days a week to get your business on the Diamond Lane on the Information Highway. GotNet will revamp and host your e-commerce site, stream your audio and video to online viewers, boost your speed with a T1 or T3 pipeline to the internet, connect your PC from anywhere in California. You name it, we got it. Call GotNet today at 460-2000. Food, shelter, clothing, net. GotNet.
Buying a home around here is an expensive proposition. Hi, I'm Jim Chubb with Pacific Inland. I've been helping people save money on home loans for nearly 20 years, and I'd like to help you save money on your next home purchase. Right now, Pacific Inland has special programs that are helping people save real money when they buy a home. Call Pacific Inland at 831-475-2600, and we'll tailor one of these programs to help you buy a home. That's Pacific Inland at 475-2600, licensed by the California Department of Real Estate.
My name is Troy, and I met my fiancé on eHarmony.com.
My name is Tom, and I met my fiancé, Brenda, on eHarmony.com.
My name is Jack, and I met my wife, Jennifer, on eHarmony.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. These are just a few of the thousands of eHarmony matches. Dating services give you a picture and a paragraph. We go a lot deeper. We start with a personality profile that features 29 dimensions of compatibility, crucial to a long-term relationship. And if you go to eHarmony.com right now, we'll give you this $40 profile free. And then we'll find you a soulmate based on compatibility in the most important areas of life. Visit eHarmony.com today and get your free personality profile.
Hi, my name's Daniel, and I found my fiancé Allison at eHarmony.com.
A lot of happy couples out there tonight, thanks to eHarmony.com.
This is your favorite radio station, KSCO, Santa Cruz, California, 1080 on your dial.
Infuriating the masses of ultra-liberals in Santa Cruz County with unending sense, common sense, yes. Okay, hey, Roger Pasquier sitting in for MZ today on the Saturday morning special. We've got our phone lines open, 479-1080. We're talking with Professor Harold Krent of the Chicago Kent College of Law. Professor, do we have a right to privacy as well as a right to anonymity?
Well, certainly are becoming less anonymous with each succeeding year. And the other thing is to keep in mind is we don't have any right for privacy or anonymity against a non-governmental actor.
But isn't that two different things, privacy and anonymity?
Sure. I mean, there is a Supreme Court that just decided a case last term that said that you have to identify yourself if your identity has some relationship to the crime that's being investigated. That's just one tip of the iceberg, but there is a difference. Because privacy is a much more expansive notion than just identity, but we have less of each as with the succeeding years.
Mm-hmm. Professor, we have a caller on the line, Mike from Santa Cruz. Go ahead.
This is Santa Cruz Mike, not to be confused with Mike in Santa Cruz.
Okay, please. Santa Cruz Mike. Go ahead.
You know, it's fascinating. I'm almost ashamed. You know, I voted for Bush in Texas when he ran for governor against Ann Richards. I voted for Bush when he ran against Gore. I voted for Bush when he ran against who's that last guy? I don't remember his name now. He was so insignificant. But you know, it's a shame when the conservatives have become so antagonistic as you have been this morning to the liberals. And I'm ashamed to be associated with conservatives of that type of attitude.
Well, you should turn off the radio.
Now, back to this thing about the... that's your attitude. That's your crappy attitude, and that's the reason the conservatives appear to be so ignorant and mean-spirited.
Oh, no, we're not. Now, we're not ignorant. You are.
I'm ignorant?
Yes, you're an ultra-liberal, aren't you?
Well, apparently you don't listen to KSC very often. No, I'm not an ultra-liberal. Anyway,
okay.
Now, let's get to the point on this war on terror. And about all of these on the Patriot Act and this type of thing,
yeah.
It's very interesting. And I endorse this war on terror, by the way. I think that Islam should be destroyed and Islam should be crushed. It's a dangerous religion. There's no country that's benefited from Islam in the last 100 years.
Well, that kind of talk isn't going to get you anywhere.
Every country that is Islamic is third world and backwards.
Uh-oh.
So don't call me ignorant and liberal, okay?
Okay.
Learn the facts before you start making accusations.
Okay,
now,
go ahead.
Now, this war on terror, let's look at this. It's sad, very sad. The consequences on this war on terror are damaging the United States. Now, we have to have a war against Islam, but do we have to have the fascism that is developing in our country with these special relationships between security companies and the government, these special laws that we're making that are going to be like walking a casino in Vegas when you walk in anywhere in the United States and you got face software recognition recognizing you whether you're going to come into that city or not?
Are you afraid to be recognized?
It doesn't bother me. The point is the government always abuses that type of power. As an example, why is Martha Stewart in prison?
She lied.
No. What'd she lie about?
She lied about not lying.
Okay. No, the reason she is in prison is because they didn't have enough information, enough criminal evidence to prove that she was an inside trader, that she was trading inside from stock information, stock tips. So what they did, they used a new law that Clinton put into effect that if in any way, if you misrepresent, that means even representing yourself. She was one of the charges against her was that when she spoke publicly to her company in front of the representatives of her company, saying that there was no basis for the claims against her, that she was not involved in any of this, that she is free. Well, she made a false statement, a knowingly false statement. Even though there was not enough evidence to convict her of a crime, they convicted her of a secondary, something unrelated. There's something wrong with that.
She didn't tell the truth to the guys that came and talked to her, and she should have.
Well, the thing is, how can you defend yourself if you tell the truth? That means that everyone must confess that they committed a crime, so we don't need a jury trial anymore.
So you're for no interference, no Patriot Act. You don't want anything.
Let me tell you what this leads to, right?
How do you go about fighting? Well, no, wait a second. How do you? You said you got to wipe out the Muslim religion. How do you go about? Well, if you, I can't believe that makes sense.
The Patriot Act is the important thing. What just happened to a guy in America who was stupid? And it was stupid. There's already laws to convict him of this. He was pointing a laser up in the aircraft.
Yeah, it's just my neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was stupid. What the guy did was criminal and should have been prosecuted. Should have been prosecuted as a terrorist under the Patriot Act? No. But he was.
Yeah, there's creep.
That's exactly what happens. Now, let me ask you, who's going to handle all this security information? It's not going to be the government. It's going to be private corporations like DynCorp. It's going to be foreign corporations handling very important and highly classified material about citizens.
Okay, Santa Cruz, Mike, let's listen to Professor Kent. What about that? I mean, I even get concerned because sometimes I call on the phone to a bank and I'm talking to somebody in India and I'm not going to give them my Social Security number and my account numbers and all that. I just feel very uncomfortable with that.
That happens all the time, and it's happening, as you know, with the contracting out. It's become more and more endemic on our society. But I think let me just make a couple of comments. I mean, I think that what Santa Cruz Mike said about the creep is very important, is once you get special techniques to fight terror, it's very easy to have those slip down mm-hmm. to be used against the ordinary criminal. We've seen that, trying to deny ordinary criminals the right to counsel, trying to keep them more incommunicado, trying to use subpoenas against bank robbers or check kiters, as well as the informal subpoenas against those who are suspected of aiding the terrorist organizations. That's one of the problems here. And that's why my one sort of note that I can give today is you need to have very stringent audit controls in the beginning once any of these types of mechanisms are deployed in the battle against terrorism. And so the problems will not go away in terms of the misuse of data, and whether it's India or just down the street in Sacramento. But nonetheless, those issues can be minimized because we never hear in the paper and you never hear out loud what the law enforcement authorities are doing to protect the information they collect.
Right. Now, we talked about Carnivore. There was another system called Matrix that was, shot down in California by the ACLU. Basically, it's a system where you can put in height, weight, description of somebody, say, that abducted somebody or whatever, and it'll search the billions of records and then maybe come up with the 200 or 300 really big suspects. That system has been thrown out in many states. What is the problem with that?
Well, I think the problem is not with the search itself. I think the question is
when you assemble any massive data bank, you know, this is somewhat similar to the Total Information Awareness campaign that the administration had proposed and tried to fund a couple of years ago with Poindexter at its head.
I mean, this was a model for a national intelligence system, and California with the, you know, ACLU says no way.
And obviously they've scuttled it at least so far. But I think if you put in things that are just totally objective, and the objective thing may be height and weight, because you can get that off of the driver mm-hmm. motor vehicle information. That's not particularly frightening to me, because it is public information indeed, and you may or may not know most motor vehicle departments sell that information to private companies anyway. So you don't have that much privacy involved in that information. But if you begin to link it to other sources of information, that's the difficulty, because you can have, just like the Internet, you know, you type in my name, type in your name, we'll see all sorts of different alliances,
mm-hmm.
speeches, things we've done, and you put all those things together, and pretty soon you can have a mosaic that's very clear, or at least clearer in some parts, about an individual and their movements. And that's the difficulty, is who controls that information, how much can it be linked, as well as what it will be used for.
I mean, isn't it true, though, that how much time, how many people do we have to really sit and listen to somebody's telephone conversation with their boyfriend? We really don't have that unless they're somebody that we're actually watching. So isn't it a little bit over the top when, oh, everybody's going to be interfered with? Yes, we get our pictures taken when we're walking through malls, that type of thing. But isn't it a little bit too much to say that, well, they're just going to be listening to everything? I mean, God can't. God listens to every prayer. I mean, he's the only guy I know.
Yeah. No.
But you know what I'm saying. I don't think we can listen to
financial constraints. Anymore. Absolutely. Resource constraints. And the enforcement agencies can't possibly sort of do what the East German secret police used to do, is make everybody informers so they could have a record on every single person in the country. We can't afford to do that. And so you're right. You can't tap everybody's phone. You can't search everybody's email. But the difficulty is, if you give too much discretion for law enforcement agencies to decide who to pick and choose, that's the difficulty. If we can say, and I'm all right with this, if they have reasonable suspicion and some judge can say this person's a terrorist, that person is financing terrorism, then let loose the machinery of law enforcement on them. But make sure it's not just on anybody. Make sure they can't go into a library and say, I want something about Passwire. You know, we even tried that in video stores. And Congress reacted when liberals did that against Judge Bork by creating a law that forbids anybody from disclosing information about video rentals. And that's important.
Mm-hmm. We've got Faith and Aptos on the line. Faith, what do you have to say?
Yes. What I'd like to say is about how we are giving away our own information sometimes when we don't know that. For example, during the break, there were two commercials about a dating service, and also about an internet, server.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Our servers can look at everything that we do on our email, and our school districts, and I find this especially horrifying, who have their own server, have someone who sits and watches all of the emails that are written or received at the school district. Now, what about that?
Doctor? I mean, professor?
Well, most school districts can't afford to do that, but they do spot check for the same reason we talked about before in terms of resource constraints. But certainly we give away privacy, and it's okay if we know what we're giving away. And I mean, the example that I sometimes use is, if you ever go to a sporting event, you'll see somebody at a booth for some Visa card or MasterCard. If you fill something out, you get a free hat or you get a free, T-shirt. And people do that all the time. And as long as you know you're trading privacy and you understand what you're trading for a T-shirt, I think that's great. But the problem that I have is, I think that you share, is that when you're trading privacy and you don't know you're giving it away and you get nothing back, that's the problem.
Yeah, I know. I get calls from people trying to sell me something. I had a broker fella call me the other day, say, we want to sign you up for this account. Now, just give me your Social Security number, your name, your address, blah, blah, blah. Oh, my God. I said, forget it. I'm not giving my Social Security number out to anybody, period. That's it. I don't even give it to the bank. I have special passwords that I use. I've gotten through all of that. But now, there's another program out there, Professor, called the NONA program. which was a program that's based on non-obvious relationships. They say that if we'd had this, we would have known more about the hijackers of 9/11, for instance. We would have seen that, for instance, the hijackers, four or five of them were using the same frequent flyer number. If we had been able to delve into that, what about these type, that's going really deep, non-obvious relationships. Obviously, there can be situations where people can take advantage of it. It's a humanistic system. We're going to have people take advantage.
Yeah, you know, and at the airports we have something like that. It's relatively sophisticated. I mean, obviously we used to think about one-way tickets and people paying in cash, right, as the tip-offs. But there are about 24 factors that go into the matrix, and some are non-obvious to determine who's more at risk, and therefore should be subject to greater scrutiny. You know, one question is, if they get the information legitimately, I think there's nothing for us to say, right? You can get so much information about all of us on the internet these days, and that shouldn't object with the fact that if the government then uses that for some kind of secondary testing. But if you get the information in ways that people don't know you're getting the information, and if you begin to give more suspicion to people because of these non-obvious links, right? If you buy fertilizer, you may be subject to scrutiny. Mm-hmm. You just may be very interested in helping your back 40. But that may be a price that we have to pay, and we've already seen little bits of this already.
Now, the no-fly list is a contention with a lot of people. I saw a program or a news report on TV of a fella that has been on the no-fly. I think Ted Kennedy was on the no-fly list. Of course, there's an example of somebody that probably could have been put on it for whoever knows what reason, maybe just to give him a bad time. But these no-fly lists have perplexed people because once you're on it, how do you get off?
Yeah, and what if you have a similar name? I work with somebody who's a name is Jose Padilla, which is the same as the individual who's under scrutiny for making the dirty bomb and bring into the country. So once you have a similar name or a misspelling or something, your life can become a nightmare. It is so difficult bureaucratically to stop, and that is another one of the casualties. A low level privacy casualty of the system, but you know the being hassled, the too intrusive searches that women have complained about. Again, it's brought out by this system. When you don't have good training, you don't have good monitoring, and you can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know that I haven't traveled overseas in a while, probably a couple of years, but when I went over, I was a little concerned because I had looked on Google under my name, and under my name there's a fellow, Roger Pasquier, or Pasquier in this sense, who wrote a book about Islam. And I thought, oh, no. But today, maybe that's going to cause me to be on the no-fly list. I don't know.
Or at least start a list that where there's more heightened scrutiny.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then again, if you have more heightened scrutiny, then more things about you may be collected, you know, in some research institute. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's a price we do have to pay because there are these connections which may lead us to a Muhammad Atta in the future. And we just learned about, you know, that sort of at least conspiracy in the East Coast to bomb a public place, supposedly Iraqi and Chinese nationals. You know, who knows if it's true, and who knows how they found the information, but it might have been through this kind of linking of information together to give them a picture that they needed to go to stop some kind of terrorist attack.
Now, they're also talking about a voluntary ID card that you could use to travel with that would make your traveling experience a little bit faster, a little bit quicker. I don't know, a voluntary ID card, isn't that also a possibility of abuse? You can only go so far before people are copying those. Heck, we found out that a lot of these terrorists all of a sudden will notice, oh, there's 100 airline pilot jackets gone, or suits and hats and that type of thing. Is a voluntary ID card really, it's not foolproof, obviously.
No, and you know, they've talked about national ID cards, and you can put a retinal scan on it or something along those lines for added safety. And that, again, you're undermining anonymity, which you mentioned earlier, and there is a potential for theft. But we may be moving that way. And I guess what I haven't seen, and maybe you have, is that any kind of good proof that would really enhance our security by a large measure.
I suppose. I guess you can only, I mean, you have your driver's license. Of course, that's going, that has been a controversy here in California, for instance, where we may give driver's licenses. Of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger got rid of it, but they were talking about giving licenses to illegal immigrants. And, but what do you do to make sure, okay, well, this guy really isn't a member of our country. He's just here to work. What are we going to make it red, not blue, or have a green card for me? Then you start really dividing the groups up. I don't know. It makes me a little uneasy on that part.
Oh, that would make me very uneasy because anytime you have a 2, 3, 5 class scale for citizenship and benefits in the country, that just breeds, I think, contentiousness, divisions, and resentment within different groups. But a national ID card is not as easy because it's one size fits all. We all have to have them and carry them. I mean, it is subjected to being stolen or forged. But maybe that will enhance a little bit of security.
Mm-hmm. Now, where are we with the Patriot Act? Some portions of it are coming to the end this year.
At the end of this calendar year, all of it will be up for grabs. What Congress did, the last-minute compromise to try to get that 99-1 vote in the Senate, was to say that there was a sunset provision, that after a period of experimentation, which we've had, then the whole act would be up for reconsideration. So if nothing is done by the end of the year, the Patriot Act will go out of business. So which I think is a very sound congressional way to regulate. And so now it'll be up for new debate. And I think the most important innovation of the Patriot Act, which was to allow for greater information sharing between the espionage groups such as the CIA and the crime-fighting groups such as U.S. attorneys' offices, I hope that should stay in. I hope and I think it will. That's the most important part, I think, in terms of making us safer on the streets and safer in the skies. However, there are other provisions. We talked about the library provision. There are provisions in terms of not being able to get subpoenas without any kind of reasonable suspicion of people's criminal behavior. The question is what's going to happen with those, and I think the Patriot Act should be reformed, and I think it at least will be reformed in some aspects before it is reenacted at the end of this year.
What do you think are the major reforms that need to take place?
I think the problem, there's been a huge problem with what to do with aliens in our country, and that's not just the Patriot Act, but there is a provision in the Patriot Act which allows detention for no reason at all, and you can just sort of say, I want to put someone away because I think that they may be guilty of an immigration infraction, and to detain them somewhat at length, and we saw that in the aftermath of 9/11, but I think more profoundly we've seen a real callousness with respect to where the government has dealt with the aliens on Guantanamo Bay or in Afghanistan. They simply dispensed with trying to abide by international law because these people, for the most part, were either somehow linked to al-Qaeda, they thought, though they were wrong, or were just not us. They were not citizens. So I think we have to be very careful before we put special provisions allowing us to search, detain, and seize aliens without cause. So that would be certainly on the high point on that list.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that a lot of the problem with the Patriot Act may have been sort of the outgoing and very in-your-face discussions that John Ashcroft had as compared to the designee, Alberto Gonzalez, who has actually said that, you know, releasing people is going to be something that has to be done? Don't you think that maybe this different tone, maybe Gonzalez is going to have a little bit more of a respectful tone than Ashcroft did? He was a little bit more hardcore.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I agree with you fully. I mean, we don't really know too much about what Gonzalez thinks deep down. We know that he authored that torture memo that got him in trouble at the confirmation hearings, and we know that he, at least when he was counsel to the president, you know, advocated watering down the international conventions that dictated how one treats a prisoner of war. But if he has more authority as the chief legal officer of the United States, would he listen a little less to partisan concerns and so that he might not be as extreme in the future? We don't know. But certainly, as a matter of his behavior, he believes far more in conciliation than Ashcroft did. And the Patriot Act, to some extent, got a bad rap because people just didn't understand what it was. Everything that was bad, such as the military tribunals or the Abu Ghraib torture, can be linked to the Patriot Act, which just isn't true because that has nothing to do with the Patriot Act. So I think that you're absolutely right that the Patriot Act was sort of seen as this sort of lightning rod linking to Ashcroft, when indeed there were many very important parts of the Act, even though others are overbroad.
Now, he is really basically, on that torture issue, he came back the next day and said, no, personnel are not allowed to torture. So obviously he's backing that, but then he says he's not really aware of the executive branch giving permission to move terrorism suspects to, say, other countries where they do practice torture. You know, several suspects say that they were taken to Egypt, Syria, and other countries where they were tortured.
And that's not new with this administration, to be fair. I believe that took place under Clinton's administration as well. And the difficulty, I think, is that, my view of presidents in the past and so forth is you, every once in a while you need to make an exception. And maybe that torture or sending somebody to Egypt to be tortured in the face of an imminent attack by Al-Qaeda is one of those circumstances. You don't write a memo about it. And that's just a cardinal mistake. And I think that's a lesson I think he's probably learned from that way, because maybe you have to make exceptions, but once you put them down, it takes on a life of its own, and that's where he deservedly, I think, got grilled by members of Congress.
These immigration laws that President Bush are talking about obviously dovetail into the Patriot Act. Where are we at with that? There's a lot of concern, obviously, in California about the idea of letting a lot of people over the border, but they're coming anyway. They want to come here because there's work here, and there's decent work, and a lot of the work that they do, nobody else wants to do. So don't we have to have a system that allows the good people, and how do we keep those small groups of or percentages of bad guys out?
You know, in an area that's closer to my work, the huge question happens to be what to do with people who want to come over and go and have an education here. And we had a new SEVA system to track individuals who come over. But the visa process is so torturous that we're actually keeping out people who might be able to then take a little bit of America back home with them. And I think that's sort of another sort of interesting testing ground for how much you want to keep people out of the country. But we can't close the borders. I mean, we've never been able to. We certainly can't now. But we need to have systems, obviously, to do track people when they're here, and that's what SEVIS and other things do, so that we at least know that if someone's been here for 20 years and they haven't checked in and there's no reason, well, let's at least check in on them. It doesn't mean we have to deport them, but we should at least have greater monitoring.
Okay. Professor, we're going to go to break right now. We're going to come back and kind of wind this up. If there's any last-minute callers out there that want to make a comment, give us a call. 831-479-1080. This is Roger Pasquier sitting in for MZ, and we're talking about your right to privacy. Stand by.
This is your 30-second Vanguard Insight about a blind spot some investors have on the road to retirement. They set their destination but often don't notice how much it costs to make the trip. Over time, Vanguard's persistently low fees and expenses can help turn any rollover investment into real savings. And that makes for a pleasant journey. Call 1-888-VANGUARD or visit us at Vanguard.com.
Call for prospectus for more information and read it carefully before you invest. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Orrick owners know that if something ever goes wrong with their vacuum, they can call me or go into any one of my Orrick stores, and if we can't fix it the same day, we'll loan you one to use. But what if something goes wrong with one of those superstore vacuums? Who are you going to call? The cashier? What does she know about fixing vacuums? Call me at 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
When most people eat, they don't consider what happens to their food after it's been swallowed. Calories and nutrients are taken by the digestive system to feed our bodies, but what happens when we can't absorb the nutrients we ingest? Here's pharmacist Benjamin Fuchs to tell us how to better digest our food.
Food and digestion is the hardest thing that we do to our bodies on a regular basis, trying to digest our food. It creates a lot of stress on the body and produces a lot of toxins in the body as well. So a food holiday is always a good idea, no matter what your health issue is, or even if you're just plain healthy, it's a good idea to take a break from food once a week. And when you take a break from food, you want to make sure that you're drinking lots of veggie juices. Did you know just chewing your food appropriately can be a wonderful way to eliminate inflammatory conditions and can be a wonderful way to improve longevity? Just simply chewing your food can allow food to be digested more appropriately. The less we eat, the better. Now, there's different kinds of digestive enzymes. Proteolytic enzymes can have some really important effects, most especially for helping reduce inflammation. In fact, bromelain and papain alone have been shown to reduce inflammation due to trauma, but you also get secondary benefits, and that is improved digestion. Improved digestion can help eliminate toxins that make it into the bloodstream. Those toxins can actually be simply pieces of food that didn't get digested. So digestive enzymes are a wonderful strategy for taking care of that, and the digestive enzymes should be taken before meals.
Balance out your digestive system by taking American Longevity's Ultimate Enzymes. Each bottle contains a proprietary enzyme complex formulated to support all aspects of digestion, aids in detoxification, and at $19 a bottle wholesale, you'll be properly digesting fats and proteins without eating away your hard-earned dough. Give your body what it needs for proper digestive health. American Longevity's Ultimate Enzymes. To order or to pick up American Longevity products, call Scott or Jose at KSCO Radio, 831-475-1080. That's 831-475-1080.
It must be, it has to be, with that big sound it's gotta be, KSCO.
And a good Saturday morning to you. Boy, the sun is shining and the dense fog in Santa Cruz and around the Monterey Bay is moving out. And also, hopefully, a little bit of the denseness in our ultra-liberal listeners. Dr. Harold Krent is with me today. He is a professor at the Chicago Kent College of Law. We're talking about your privacy. Doctor, we've got a caller on the line, Bruce from Aptos. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. I've enjoyed the discussion. I do have to take serious issue with something that was just said about immigrants coming here to work and taking jobs that Americans don't want.
Mm-hmm. What do you have about that? Okay.
Okay. The issue is this: the fact that a Mexican laborer will cross the border and work for $6, $7, $8, $10 an hour, well, that creates the wage. And so when employers say, well, Americans won't take that job, well, yeah, because the job has been, that wage level has been created by the oversupply of labor crossing the border.
So
it becomes self-fulfilling. If we open up the border even now, the wage will go down even further, and it'll be even less desirable for Americans. So it becomes self-fulfilling. Now you have whole job categories that are filled with nothing but illegal immigrant labor. The second thing, real quick here, is the benefits. It's a one-sided thing where people talk about what immigrants contribute, not the benefits. And it's just way lopsided. Also, the unemployment, the idea that all illegal immigrants and all immigrants are working is nonsense. In the Central Valley, the unemployment rate in the winter months goes up to almost 50% in many communities. And so the idea that all these immigrants are working is untrue.
Okay, but how do you think the American public would handle a, say, $5 head of lettuce?
Well, I think they would love a $5 head of lettuce if they realized that they wouldn't be having to build more schools, that the hospitals wouldn't be going broke. There's just a tremendous disconnect. In California, the journalists and politicians, they refer to California's soaring population growth and all that it's going to cost us. Every bit of population growth now is accounted for by immigration and the immigrant birth rate. And so all the problems we're having with water, with providing health care, with providing education is directly related to immigration. And so you know, people that want $5 head of lettuce, or okay, let's say we say, well, we just want a 25-cent head of lettuce. Well, maybe the cost of that is not having an emergency room in your community.
Okay, Bruce, thanks for calling.
Uh-huh.
Professor, I don't know what to say about that. I guess it's not really on our topic, but it goes to the same premise that we do have a lot of people that want to get into this country, whether they want to get into it for work or whether they want to get into it to do harm to us. Everybody wants somehow to get in. We do have porous borders, but we just can't. I don't see how we can live in this day and age with the idea that we're not going to have some of our privacy taken away from us.
I think it's inevitable, and I think the aspect that we've mentioned a couple times in the conversation is that technology has really enhanced the ability of the government to collect and assemble and research data about all of us, and that gives them a greater incentive to just want more and get more, and whether it's the Matrix system, total information awareness, just the electronic eavesdropping. It's all there for the taking, and that will give a spur to the government to invest more and more in technology. So we're going to lose some privacy. We're going to gain some security. And I think the key thing that we can do is we can ask that the government be as careful as it can in collecting and disseminating that data. And that's the part that I think the government has fallen down on. And that is, we as citizens can come up and ask for real checks to make sure that unauthorized people, whether it's here or India, don't get hold of that information. And to make sure that they don't get sensitive information from us, whether it's our book, social security numbers or our books that we take out of the library without real reason.
How do you watch the watchers? That's the last question.
And that's something that we've been struggling with as a country and generations and generations. But I think you can do it. You can have reports to show how many times certain information has been taken, how many times searches have been made for different criteria to find matches. If we can begin to get those kinds of sort of old sunlight approach to these kind of searches and with the information that's taken, and we have double checks to make sure that those is accurately reported, we at least be better educated as a citizen to think that, okay, these surveillance cameras are worth it in the parking lots and on the streets, or it's great to have the ability of the government to collect data about everybody because they only use it twice a year in real emergencies. That would help us if we know that. But right now, we don't have that protection.
Professor, I got about 45 seconds left. What is the book that you have coming out? I just want to give you a plug on that.
The book I have is Presidential Powers. It gives you a historical and contemporary analysis of how the presidents have used powers both in the domestic and international arenas. And so you can look anywhere on the line and find Presidential Powers. If you enjoy a little background and analysis of what Bush and Clinton and Nixon and even George Washington were all about.
Professor, thanks for joining us today. Very interesting conversation.
All right. Take care out in the fog.
Okay, we will. And thank you to all of the listeners for joining us today. I'm Roger Pasquare. I've been in for MZ. He'll be back next week with more of the Saturday special. You have a good one. And this is KSCO Santa Cruz.
That's all, folks.
Much of the state, except for perhaps the far southwest.